Recording in progress.
Until next week. So, Marcy, we can move to the next item of the apologies. I know that there's still an apology of the chair of the portfolio committee, Honorable Ntshontsho. I'm not sure if there are other apologies from honorable members.
We have no apologies, Chair. We have no apologies, except the one of the chair. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's only the one of the chair, and it will be all noted as such. Honorable members and their colleagues, now we are moving to the third item, and you'll understand that on the 2nd of November 2022, the National School of Government briefed the committee on the approved national framework towards the professionalization of the public sector. And since then, we are of the view that the framework now is currently being implemented across all spheres of government. And this meeting of today, colleagues and honorable members, is to give one, the Department of Public Service and Administration to brief the portfolio committee, and then it will be followed by the NSG, and immediately then it will be followed by the PSC. But if the minister is here in the platform, because I can't see him, the minister, and I can't see Marcy, the deputy minister, and I will request that they first do their opening remarks, and immediately then it will be the presentation of the DPSA, followed by the principal, and then the NSG, and then the last presentation will be the ESC, and I will give the chair, if he's in the meeting, or the deputy chair, or whoever that has been tasked to come and also do input on behalf of the PSC. But I don't see Honorable Kivit. Masu.
Yes, Chair. I think the department can assist in terms of just identifying who's available, Chair. Yes, Chair.
Okay. Okay, I can see the DG is here. Good morning, Honorable DG. I will then give the
morning,
DG.
Chair.
I'm handing over to yourself because I can't see the minister here and the deputy minister, and of which you are here. You can do the opening remarks and immediately the presentation of the public of the department. Thank you very much, colleagues and honorable members.
Morning, honorable members. Morning, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity to present our work that we've been doing in respect to the Public Service Act. I mean, to the two legislations, not just the Public Service Act, in respect to professionalization. I'd like to request Secretariat to showcase the presentation. And we have our head of legal, or Chief Director Legal, Ms. Renisha Naidu, who's going to be taking us through the presentation. We have a very brief presentation, Chair, that we have prepared, because we, in the meeting that we presented on of the annual performance plan, we shared in detail how as DPSA we have built in implementation of areas that affect us in the professionalization framework into our annual operational plans and our annual performance plan. So we are not going to present on that detail as well, because we've already shared that detail. We have also worked with NSG and made our inputs into the presentation of NSG around the areas that we are leading as DPSA in terms of the implementation of the public service implementation of the professionalization framework, taking into account the overarching role of the department, which relates to establishing norms and standards for effectiveness and efficiency of the public service, including obviously professionalization. There are norms and standards that we must put in place in respect to that. Thank you, Chair. I was hoping that Secretariat would have shown the presentation by now, and I would be able to hand over to Ms. Renisha Naidu, our Chief Director, HR. I'm not sure what the arrangement. Our Chief Director, Legal, Apologies, I'm not sure what the arrangement. Oh, I think Renisha is screening for herself. Chair, with that short opening remarks, I would like to hand over to Ms. Renisha Naidu to take the presentation forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, teacher.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning. I hope everyone can hear me. You'll just guide me if you can see the presentation in a presentation format.
Yes, it's clear.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning to the members of the committee. Good morning, DGs. I'm not sure if the Minister and Deputy Minister are in yet, but good morning in absentia. And good morning, colleagues. So, Madam Chair, we've been asked to present on how we will address the professionalization or the work that emanates from the professionalization framework into the laws that we administer as the Department of Public Service and Administration. So how we have drafted the presentation is that we have identified what are the areas that require our attention from or emanating from the professionalization framework, what are the reforms we are looking at doing in those areas, as well as to give a little bit of detail in terms of the work that we are undertaking in those particular areas. So, Madam Chair, the presentation, the first slide is an identification of the areas that we have identified that comes out of the professionalization framework that requires the DPSA to do some work in terms of reviewing its legislation to align with what are the outcomes of those of that professionalization framework. The areas we've identified and that require our attention is to manage the political administrative interface between the executive authorities and HODs. The second area is to create a head of the public service. The third area is to deal with the training and development of employees to ensure that we have a competent and suitably skilled workforce. The fourth area is to ensure that we are able to deploy skills where they are required. So we must ensure that we have sufficient legislation that allows us to move people around and to allow for the transfer of those skills. In terms of the fifth area we looked at is how we then promote ethical conduct and ensure the removal of conflict of interest, and how we manage performance in the public service in terms of both departments at a departmental level as well as at an employee level, and how we manage then also discipline of public service. We have also been, the area that has been identified is also the role of special advisors and how they interface with the department in terms of the work of the department. The proposed amendments that we are doing, so for the 2023-2024 financial year, the DPSA has prioritized many legislative reforms that are going to take place. The first being the amendment to the Public Service Act and the amendment to the Public Administration Management Act, which has both bills have been now.
So, Ms. Naidu,
yes.
Ms. Naidu,
yes,
your slides are not moving. You've been in page one.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Do you see them now?
Yes, you are still in page one. You can move. Your slides are not moving.
It's moving on
but
my
side. But not from
side.
Our own. No, not from our gadgets.
Okay, let me stop sharing and try it again. Do you see it now, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so we're on slide four now. Do you see slide four?
Yes, Ms. Nike.
Oh, thank you very much. So as part of the amendments that we are doing I think when I put it in a slide presentation, it doesn't move. So as part of, do you see slide 4?
Yes,
we see slide 4. Okay. So as part of the amendments that we propose to do in this financial year, we are amending both the Public Service Act, the Public Administration Management Act, and both those bills have been submitted to Parliament on the 31st of March, 2023. I am led to believe that we will be in the Portfolio Committee very soon to discuss the substantive amendments that are being proposed in both those bills. So this presentation just scans some of the areas that then link back to the professionalization framework, but the more detail will be done in those further presentations. The further amendments that we are looking at doing is some short-term amendments to the public service regulations, where we envisage that those regulations are focused on short-term measures such as removing red tape and dealing with certain areas of the professionalization framework. And the target date for those amendments is the 1st of October 2023, when we envisage that we will bring in that reviewed regulation. As part of the annual performance plan of the DPSA, one of the targets that we have also put in is a review of all determinations and directives that have been issued in terms of the Public Service Act that contain matters that are regulated through norms and standards, etc. And what we are doing as part of that process is ensuring that all our regulations, all our determinations and directives are updated in terms of new laws that have been promulgated since they've been issued, as well as making sure that we align with new policy direction that that has been approved. In terms of the Public Service Amendment Bill, when we look at what we have drafted in terms of the amendment bill and what we are proposing, the identified areas that are emanating from the professionalization framework particularly have been addressed to this degree, where we have looked at, as part of the political administrative interface, we have looked at proposals to divest all administrative powers to HODs or to vest administrative powers with HODs, while we retain strategic powers with executive authorities. The second area that we focused on in terms of the creation of the head of the public administration is to provide that the DG in the presidency will play that role to ensure that there's better coordination between the spheres of government and that there is support given to the president, both in terms of the president's role under the Public Service Act, as well as any other provision or support that the president may require. So the DG in the presidency will play that role. We've added also, as part of the political administrative interface agenda and dealing with that, we've added a prohibition for heads of departments and employees reporting directly to those heads of departments from holding office in any or office of authority in any political party. And what that means is that the heads of departments and those DDGs or those persons reporting directly to those head of departments will not hold office or at least the top tier of a political party, like your chairperson, your deputy chairperson, your treasurer, etc. In terms of the Public Administration Management Amendment Bill, the areas that link back again to the professionalization agenda is that we have provided for the transfer of employees between the public service and municipalities and between municipalities with their consent. And this will allow the mobility of employees across the spheres of government to address resource deficiencies and operational requirements wherever they are necessary. I think I want to emphasize also that with transfers, it retains benefits and conditions of service as transfers take place. So it doesn't negatively affect employees. In terms of the provisions on doing business with the state, we have also added amendments to the Public Administration Management Act to ensure that this provision is properly managed, and we've clarified certain issues that have become quite difficult to manage without amendments. We have also clarified the role of the NSG in terms of the training that it will provide to public servants. We have provided for extended powers of the NSG to local government as well as public entities, and to allow the NSG to facilitate higher education training, and to all with the goal of ensuring that the training that is provided to public servants enables a professional public servant as well as the capable public administration. In terms of the last amendment to the Public Administration Management Act, again linked to the professionalization framework, we have also provided for the imposition of a 12-month cooling-off period for employees who were involved in the procurement of service providers. What that means is that if employees were involved in procurement processes, they are not permitted to join those successful bidders within a period of 12 months of appointing that service provider. So it basically stops the so-called javelin throwing. In terms of the last processes that we are, apart from the amendment bills that the DPSA is undertaking, as I said, is to review all its determinations and directives. As part of this review process, the directives and determinations that directly link back to what has been identified in the professionalization framework is that we need to revisit the minimum entry requirements for SMS and to review that process. We also need to review our competency assessment tools for managers. The training and development determinations and directives that deal with particularly the graduate and internship programs, orientation and induction programs,
recording in progress.
Reviews, which we expect to conclude by the end of this financial year. Once these processes are concluded, it is envisaged that we will issue a handbook that then contains all of these newly revised dispensations. Thank you very much. That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, Ms. Naidu. The NSG, Principal?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to you and the Honorable members and the colleagues from the NSG. I do have a presentation which I will share here, and the other colleagues that I will request as well during the course of this presentation to make input as well. So let me do a full screen. May I check, Honorable Chair, if it is visible to all?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Chair, members, and the colleagues. So, we, as I said, we'll do a relay. There is a few slides where my colleague from the Public Service Commission will say a few words, because we've incorporated this work. We are coordinating very tightly across the MPSA, the portfolio, as it is, departments that ought to provide leadership in this regard. And we will indicate in some of the slides that this work is being done whilst we are the ones who are who are leading this work. There are responsibilities that departments and other organs of state have in this regard. Just a reminder that this work is done within the context of priority number one, which is building a capable ethical and developmental state, and that's the work which is coordinated by the GSKI cluster, which includes all departments of government, including SALGA as well. They do attend that cluster. So again, just an overview of the framework. This has been stated and well written about on issues of entrenching a dynamic system of professionalization in the public sector. It's important to underline the word a dynamic system, because we don't think that what we're proposing here, as the colleague Renisha was showing, that it should be static. It needs the system that must be able to move with the times, because the dynamics of governing the state is constantly changing, and therefore you need to dynamize the entire system to be responsive to those imperatives. And secondly, we make reference to the public sector and not public administration. And that is why, the PSA indicated the issue of introducing norms and standards. So in instances where the MPSA does not have the power or authority to regulate, but the norms and standards that are going to be developed should then be adopted and be able to apply in other sectors as well. And I'll make an example shortly of what SALGA is doing to make sure that the framework is implemented in the local government sphere. This slide just shows how the implementation modalities have been mapped out.
Recording in progress.
The work that DPSA is doing on designing the integrity test, for an example, it means that those will attend at an appropriate moment and as when will be approved by SALGA, that those will be extended to the local government sphere as well. Fortunately, the honorable members are aware that the legislative change that has happened in the SALGA space in some instances already takes forward the spirit of the framework. For an example, the deputy or the senior managers in the local government sphere are now being made permanent. And as it is proposed in the framework, they are not being made permanent automatically. So the fact that those what we'll call deputy, city managers, those who report to the municipal managers, those whose contracts will not be permanent. It will not be automatic, because for an incumbent, it means, as the framework provides, you have to go through the process again, so interviewed, and it has to be fit for purpose before your contract can be made permanent. As we said, the same provisions will apply as well with the extension of tenure of HODs to 10 years, so there will be nothing automatic in that regard. But the point being made here is that SALGA has adopted the framework, which means that now the real work of working on the modalities for actual implementation begins, and legislative amendments that have been done by COG that already make provision for this. On the left, it indicates some of the lead departments here: the NSG, DPSA, PSC, the Treasury, DPME, and the AG, and there will be others as well who are leading various aspects of this work. So, as my colleague Renisha has indicated, that the legislative amendments that have now been submitted to Parliament should be read in context of what National Treasury will also be bringing in the months to come, which is the Public Procurement Bill, as well as the mooted amendment.
Recording in progress.
And so it should all be read in context, together with the legislative amendments that the Public Service Commission is leading. We are yet to finalize the discussion for the adoption of the framework with the legislative sector. We are hoping that in this calendar year, we will take this into finality, so that all the employees in the legislative sector as well will be able to write the pre-entry examination, the integrity test, and all other, you know, provisions of the framework. In the public entities, the engagements are very advanced, and in the coming months, again, there is going to be a directive that ensures that we implement the provisions of the framework in the public entities. Safe to say that most of this is already being done even before there is any instrument that has been signed. Many instances, public entities are already beginning to align. Chair, let me request my colleague DG Dingi to speak to the next three slides, and I'm going to come back. These are what I've referred to earlier on about the amendments to the legislative amendments. DG Dingi, if you can, the next three slides, then I'm going to come back.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson and committee members. Perhaps it is proper to allow the Chair just to give a brief overview with regards to the role of the PSC so that I can then take members through the presentation. Chairperson Professor Fikeni is in the meeting. Chair?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. I'll just say a few remarks so that the context of what has been integrated is well appreciated and understood. As Prof. Ngawen was saying, we're working very closely together as they are leading and convening this process. To us, it came naturally because PSC had crafted a professionalization framework back in 2014, and as such, it was easy to join the work now that the momentum and the realization is upon us. The second thing, the PSC bill approval itself, which will enhance the capacity of the PSC and enhance its autonomy and powers, is part of professionalization exercise. And secondly, the fact that we are extending our focus to the local government sphere, as Parliament in 2011 had so instructed, finally this being realized, we have had presentations to SALGA to get their buy-in as well as their support, and they have actually embraced this. We have made two presentations to that effect. PSC also volunteered after the approval by the Cabinet of the framework to sponsor, in terms of resourcing, the process of a retreat workshop where we will outline the implementation framework, working together with the DPSA, with the NSG, which is of course convening the exercise. And we even said we could invite the National Planning Commission members as well as DPME should the need arise. And we are also consulting as part of our MOU with the UNDP, that is the United Nations organ, specifically on what makes for an effective implementation, because as a country, we are notorious at times of having some of the best policy intentions which never get implemented. And this we're also trying to time in our mind and planning to say, how do we time this implementation such that the end of sixth administration and beginning of seventh administration will be synchronized with this exercise. Thank you very much, Chairperson. DG, you may take over.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Members, as Chair Fikeni has already indicated, we have made significant progress with regards to the review of the Public Service Commission Bill. In fact, yesterday we presented to the Cabinet Committee and it was approved for publication, for public comment. The primary objective really of the bill is to ensure that an independent secretariat is established for the Public Service Commission. This will replace the current OPSC, which is the Office of Public Service Commission, is the national government department that provides administrative and secretariat support to the commission. Now, the Public Service Commission is the only constitutional entity that is supported by a government department. And so in this process will ensure that it has its own independence, which is strengthened in terms of Chapter 13 of the National Development Plan. Next slide, please. Can we move to the next slide, colleagues? Thank you. Continuing on the primary objectives of the bill, it's also to ensure that the mandate of the Public Service Commission is extended to deal with matters in local government as well as other public and state-owned entities, because they currently, in terms of Section 196 of the Constitution, we are only able to deal with matters in the national and provincial space. So the implementation of the Public Service Commission Act, once it's promulgated, will enable us to be able to address matters, systemic deficiencies, investigate cases in local government as well as in state-owned entities. Next slide, please. As members would recall, this is also one of the SONA priorities, where the president had indicated that there was a need to amend legislation in order to strengthen the role of the Public Service Commission. And the commission is then meant to ensure that suitably qualified persons are appointed in senior management positions as part of the implementation of the professionalization framework. We are working together with the National School of Government as well as the DPSA, as my colleagues have already indicated. And as a Public Service Commission, we will be overseeing the implementation of the framework. We are intending to have a session where we work together in order to oversee the crafting of the implementation plan. And the plans are underway to host that before the end of this quarter. And this is, of course, to ensure that ultimately we move towards a single harmonized public service, which is one of the key priority areas for the 23-24. That then ends the contribution of the PSC. We had agreed that we will do a combined presentation. I'm going to hand back over to DG Ngaweni. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. And so as indicated that the work is continuing. The advocacy work is key here, honourable members, because the framework needs to be seen as a catalytic intervention that will trigger work in various spheres and organs of state and other sectors of society. So, for example, as I indicated, that we engage with the legislative sector, and that through the sector of parliament and engaging through those formal processes, hope this year we expect that the framework should be adopted so it can be implemented in that regard. We are engaging higher education institutions. They were already engaged 2 years ago when the work on the framework was unfolding, so this is not new. The discussions are at a very advanced stage between ourselves and higher education institutions, because hopefully there's going to be changes to the curriculum as well in the coming year, to make sure that we prepare people who work in the public sector, deal with issues of ethics, issues of proficiency, way before they join the public sector. We're also talking to the quality councils as well, and SAQA, and they have given very crucial input in this regard. Premier's offices have been engaged, professional bodies in a very dynamic way. Some are far advanced than others, and I must mention in this regard that in the built environment, sector, for example, that the Council for Built Environment, CBE, which is an entity of the Department of Public Works, is leading the work of getting the framework to be institutionalized within the ambit of the professional bodies that are in the built environment space. We're also engaging with civil society. There's a lot of advocacy work that is happening, and in the majority of cases, this work is supported national department SOCs as well as the lead the key leading departments such as National Treasury, and I'll give some examples. So there's a lot of advocacy work. There's a lot of interest, you know, in the higher education space inside the state, as well as in local government as well. So we are talking FTIN and implementation. I could state, for example, that there are departments that are championing the professionalization work in a sense that they are saying even before some of the legal instruments that have been referred to above are signed, they need to be far ahead. One of the, you know, projects that is supporting this implementation of the framework is the issue of the skills audit that the president spoke about in the reply to the of the nation address. The work is far advanced. I need to state something here, honorable members, that the skills audit using the skills audit framework that was prepared by the PCTA and the DPSA, it is not a punitive intervention. The skills audit is looking at the gaps in the department, which are measured between two significant variables. What is the mandate of the department, and what capabilities exist in the department, and how those gaps therefore can be filled. And the documents in this regard of the framework that guides the skills audit is available at PSA. We can share that. So it is important to indicate that, as I said, this is a dynamic process. By doing these skills audits, it becomes more empowering even for accounting officers to know how they can realign their own resources towards closing the gaps that exist within the department. And by the end of this year, the departments that have been selected, as indicated below, we will have some knowledge and understanding of what the gaps are. In some instances, in these departments already, there are vacancy rates, which means once gaps are identified with a vacancy rate that could be high, those vacancies could be used therefore to address some of the gaps that will have been identified. As a reminder, these are the five pillars, you know, of the framework, and that work is underway, and it has various stages in this regard. So, for example, on the recruitment and selection, as the DG indicated, and she also elaborated on this when she was presenting on the APP, the work of designing an integrity, you know, assessment, which will form part of the already given assessments that are done before people are employed. That work is far advanced, which means as soon as it is ready, it will be implemented. The pre-entry assessment, which is called Nugela, is already being implemented for SMS, and we are now at a very advanced stage in terms of creating that for mixed management, the provisions of the framework. And there's a lot of work being done on induction, on onboarding, planning and performance management, as the colleague Renisha indicated here, that there are instruments that have been prepared which will amend the existing performance management system. On continuing learning and professional development, as I've indicated, that that work is underway. The NSG will be playing a much more prominent role in that regard, working with higher education institutions. And on career progression, also the DG and Renisha has mentioned some of the provisions in that regard. So this is more of a detail, honorable chair. It maps the timeline of things that ought to be done in the coming months, and I indicated some of it's already underway. Let me get my colleague Dr. Botshabelo Maja to walk us through some of this in the timeline. This, honourable members, is already in our APP, so we are committed to do it. And each time we come to present to yourselves on the work we are doing on our AP quarterly progress reports, we will be giving you updates on this. Dr. Maja, through you, honourable chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Chair, principal, you just control the slides last. We will talk through this, honourable members, through the five pillars. But what we would also do, because when we talk to each of the pillars, we will touch on the work that the National School of Government is doing, the work that the Department of Public Service and Administration is also doing, and also the Public Service Commission. Instead of continuing with the relay, I will talk through all of them because we work through these inputs together. So this is the first part on Pillar 1. The work of the National School of Government is mapped out in the slide that we can see in front of us. These are the APP targets that we have with regards to pre-entry recruitment and selection and the additional work that we will be doing on UGELA by extending it to middle management, looking at extending it to local government and SOEs, and also looking at how we would collaborate with the higher education and also professional bodies. In the next slide, you will see that we then talk to pre-entry in relation to the work that the Department of Public Service and Administration will be doing in that regard. This includes issues around the compulsory occupation-based competency and integrity assessment that the principal was just talking to a minute ago, looking at the issue of merit-based recruitment and appointments, which will be a skills for the future of work in the public service, and also dealing with the issue of an aging public service, because the numbers and digit DPSA will be ready all the time to share those numbers with the committee if it so desires. The aging public service is a cause for concern. More and more of our public servants are due to retire in the coming years. At the same time, we need to deal with the issue of youth representation through strengthening the internship pipeline and enabling specialist skills recruitment. In the next slide, Chair, you will see that we then talk to the Office of the Public Service Commission with regards to the same pillar of pre-entry recruitment and selection. Of course, it talks to the issue of recruitment of DGs and DDGs and the work that the Public Service Commission is doing to create a pool of technical experts that will be critical in the appointment of DGs and DDGs. This will also have implications for recruitment of municipal managers because we will also need a pool there. That's the work that the Public Service Commission is continuing to do. Also with regards to the recruitment of commissioners to the Public Service Commission itself, the work with regards to the utilization of external experts, whether it be from academia, professional associations, that work is continuing. We then move to the next slide, which is now looking at Pillar 2, which is about induction and onboarding. The work that needs to be done with regards to induction and onboarding starts with the work that we need to do with regards to participation in compulsory induction program by all prospective public servants. So what the framework says is that immediately after appointment or within 90 days of appointment, all those who are newly appointed must subject themselves to the compulsory induction program. We are also looking at the NSG at induction of boards of SOEs, which is another requirement that the framework has put upon us. Of course, we are also looking at traditional leaders, and we continue work there in reorienting traditional leaders on the art of facilitation, which is aimed at socioeconomic development in our communities in rural areas, so that traditional leaders are able to reclaim their space as part of this professionalization endeavor to trigger and to drive socioeconomic development. And then, of course, we need to worry about the madalas in the public sector, those who've been around for many years, because it doesn't mean that when you've been here for so many years, you are untouchable, you don't have to go back to the simulator. The framework says we need to make sure that all of those also come back for what we call reorientation. So there will be a compulsory reorientation for serving public servants so that we continue to refresh ourselves and make sure that what we do remains relevant to today's world instead of the world that we inherited when we joined the public service. Of course, the DPSA will be doing the review of the directive for induction and ongoing. That is in progress. The work on the induction of the Institutes of Traditional Leaders is continuing. We'll also be looking at a phased approach in the implementation with local government, looking at the security cluster, and also appointed those officials that are appointed into political office. Coaching mentorship program is another area that we'll be looking at for public service leaders. Those are in the SMS and rolling that out with the Department of Public Service and Administration. In the next slide, Chair, we then talk to public entities and organizations that are enrolled in the NSG induction program to date. These are those entities that we continue to work with. We are hoping that these numbers will grow, because what the framework endeavors to do is that we will never be able to professionalize the public sector if we're going to work in silos, if we're going to duplicate each other's work. And this slide is beginning to show that integrated work, that coordinated work, that work that means all of us as a public sector are now pulling in one direction. So in the next slide, what we then do to move to pillar three is to say, with regards to performance planning and management, our sister department, DPSA, will review the performance management system so that we deal with a number of issues, including linking performance of HODs and DDGs to those of the institutions, including aligning performance management with professional bodies, also looking at reviewing the guidelines for advisors. So all of that work will be done in Pillar 3, so that we also, through DPSA, are able to introduce independent triggers for exit of non-performing HODs. We're able to improve the competency of political principals to manage performance. We are also able to address the systemic challenges that result in instability and poor relations between our EAs and the HODs. In the next slide, Chair, which is now looking at the issue of continuing learning and professional development, these are the lead departments. Of course, Chair, as we are always at pains to indicate, every government department, every government entity has a huge responsibility to be involved to make sure that the implementation of this framework takes place. Yes, there are lead departments like ourselves, DPSA, PSC, and NSG that will be responsible for specific areas, whether it be human resources or ICT. There are specific responsibilities that National Treasury will have. You will recall, Chair, for example, that the issue of supply chain management is a recommendation that arose also out of the State Capture Commission report, that there is a need to professionalize supply chain managers in the public sector. National Treasury is seized with that matter, and they've already begun the process to make sure that they put the necessary implementation areas and the necessary interventions to deal with that.
DPME, of course, will have to worry about policy and planning and occupation, and also looking at establishing a professional body in that regard. In a number of instances across the public sector, we will have to look at establishing professional bodies because they do not exist in a number of critical areas. One of those areas is around policy monitoring and evaluation, which DPME will be looking at. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, of course, is worried about the legal profession, how the work needs to be undertaken, how do we make sure that those who are in the legal faculties within the state are properly professionalized so that they're able to serve papers in a court of law. AG also is worried about audit and risk and how to professionalize that area, similarly as the principal was indicating with the Department of Public Works and also the Council for the Built Environment. There is a lot of work there. We already have an MOU ourselves as the NSG with the Council for the Built Environment, and we've been doing a lot of work already with that council. And also the DPSA is looking at setting guidelines and standards for professionalization and registration. In the next slide, Chair, you will see that in Pillar 5, which then talks to career progression and career incidents, we have a number of interventions that we are earmarking from our side as the National School of Government. We've been engaging with the Minister for Higher Education. We're looking at the NSG being declared as an organ of state to offer higher education qualifications. This is a matter that is also being dealt with in the amendments to PAMA that Radisha was talking to. We are also looking at working closely with the DPSA in developing RPL policy for the public service, reviewing the RPL policy for optimal use in recruitment in the public service, and also looking at establishing a steering committee in that regard. In the next slide, Chair, you will see then that what we were saying from the DPSA side with regards to career progression and career incidents, we need to deal with the issue of discipline management and strategies being finalized in that regard. The revolving door policy that Cabinet approved in 2006 has now been reactivated through this framework. But we need to look at it, and DPSA is looking at reviewing that policy so that we allow an exchange of skills and knowledge between the public sector and other sectors such as academia, private sector, professional bodies, and so forth. There is also work, as the DPSA was indicating, to deal with the political administrative interface. The head of public administration is one of those matters. The tenure of HODs and DDGs is also another matter in that regard. In the next slide, Chair, we then conclude by just reiterating a few points. I'm now really flowing, so if I wasn't flowing so nicely, I would give back to the principal, but I'm not going to give back so that I do the conclusion. So Salga, the principal, spoke to it. They've now adopted the framework, and we're looking forward to implementation there. The skills audit, we've finalized arrangements with the HSRC, we've finalized arrangements with the 8 departments that will be impacted immediately so that we have something ready for the president in 9 months' time. And of course, we will continue to support SALGA in implementing the framework. We'll continue to work closely with the Department of Public Enterprises with regards to state-owned entities. We continue. We had a very successful engagement with National Treasury and Supply Chain Management practitioners on the 4th, which will hopefully trigger a process there. In the next slide, Chair, you will see then that we're just saying that the role players will need to ensure successful implementation. This is ourselves as a National School of Government talking to issues of advocacy that we are dealing with. The DPSA with regards to the framework and the directives that will arise, the Office of the Public Service Commission with regards to coordinating key departments in the implementation of the framework and the bills that the DG OPSC was just talking to, Of course, DPME is worried about planning, monitoring, and reporting on the implementation of the framework. We work closely with them in that regard. And lastly, Chair, AGSA on audit and implementation compliance. Back to you, Principal.
Yeah, no, thank you, Honorable Chair and colleagues. So this is our input. We can assure the committee and the honorable members that the implementation of the framework is well underway. Necessary legislative amendments are being made by the PSA, by the PSC, and the National Treasury is doing this. There are instruments that will be signed by the Minister of Public Administration in the coming months to give effect to the implementation of the provision of the framework that do not require or depend on the amendment of legislation. We are, for our part as the NSG, where we are responsible for putting measures in place, far advanced in this regard. So as and when the date is set for implementation of pre-entry exams for middle managers, for example, we will be ready to do that as and when the instrument sets the date for the implementation of the integrity, you know, test, which will be augmenting the current assessments at PSA, will be ready as and when the date will be stipulated for when the work of the PSC can resume in terms of setting up a panel. The PSC will do that. It does not require even any legislative amendment. It's just the instrument indicating when the date will be, because even as is the case currently, a minister or an EA can choose to consult a panel and bring experts into the interview. And as indicated, in many instances, the provisional framework are being implemented, such as the rapidly growing program of induction boards of state-owned entities that the NSG is leading, and the other departments as well are far advanced in this regard. And the skills or the project should, by end of this year, give us a sense of what the capacity gaps are in the departments that have been mentioned. It will not be punitive, it will be more developmental, and there are resources already in each of these departments either to employ, because there are some vacancies, in some cases they've got training budgets. So this will give us a sense of how then do we reprioritize the resources to advance the professionalization agenda. We thank the committee for the support it has provided to the MPSA over the past 2 years of doing this work, and we look forward to engaging further. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Back to you.
No, thank you very much, Principal, and thank you very much to all the presenters, one from the DPSA, the NSG, and also the PSC. Now, honorable members, the presentation up before us, I will then take hands for questions, comments to the presentations. Okay, I will start with Honorable Kibi, followed by Honorable North Nahal, then followed by Honorable Mutsipe, and then after Honorable Mutsipe, it will be Honorable Maklua, then Honorable Zakele, and then Honorable Manili. I've said Honorable Kibi, and then Honorable North Nahal, followed by Honorable Mutsipe, and then after Honorable Mutsipe, Honorable Maklua, and then Honorable Ntuli, and then Honorable Jackson, and then Honorable Mane.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you so much. Good morning, Chair, Honorable members and colleagues. Chairperson, let me welcome and appreciate the presentations by the colleagues. It's quite clear, Honorable Chair, we understand and we know where we are moving to. Honorable Chair, my first question will go to EDPSA as to what provision in the legislation will enable the management of remuneration in the context of movement of public servants to different spheres of government, which is critical for the creation of a single public service. And my next one would be also, what consequential aspects will the legislative change have on public servants doing business with the state? On DPSA and NSG and also the others, PSC, what are the
recording in progress
seeks to address, such as review of the minimum entry requirements for the SMS, the competency assessment tools for managers, the training and development determinations, and directives dealing with a graduate internship programs, orientation and induction programs, and the revolving door policy, the special advisor dispensation, discipline management processes, PMDS processes, ensuring merit-based recruitment practices that are inclusive and transparent. And also, what are the effects of those identified weaknesses and how will they be resolved, or what type of outcomes? That is my question, Honorable Chair, and I thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kibi, Honorable North Nahal.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody on the platform. I would just like to ask to NSG and PSC, what is the progress of the discipline management implementation as this was planned for implementation in the current financial year? My next question will be, what are weaknesses in the PMDS system and how will it be strengthened by the review? The next question, is the NSG and the PSC of the view that the SMS requirements are low, and how are the advising interventions where state organs apply low standards? Another question, will the amendments include clauses that enable reversal of inappropriate or unsuitable appointments that do not meet requirements in a timely manner? And I would also just like to say thank you for the presentation. And that's my questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nosnachal, Honorable Mutsipe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'd also like to welcome the presentation that has made just now. I've got questions for DPSA. My first question is, since the head of the public service will be the DG presidency, will his or her position not be compromising in terms of duties, and it will not be overburdened to run both, as it will be a huge responsibility to do? And then the second one is, what safeguards will be in place to protect employees from abuse of being transferred between the public service and the municipalities, and between municipalities on account of clash of personalities between them and their managers? And the last one is on the provision to do
Honorable Matripe, we've lost you.
Wait, my don't do that anymore. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Honorable Matripe, we've lost your last question.
Okay. Yes. My last question is on prohibition to do business with the state is there will be not be any transgression from the 3 years of government for any employees to do business with the state. Be no single employee who. Honorable Chair?
Yes, ma'am. Honorable Mutipe. Yes, we've heard your last question. Thank you so much. Thank you. Honorable McClure.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to say a lot has been said yesterday in Parliament regarding the PSC bill. Yes, we appreciate this very much, and I think it is long overdue. But I just want to ask, in terms of the duration for finalization of this bill, I want to know how long will it take? Is there any way that we can have this as a matter of urgency? I'm going to tell you why, Chair. It's because you will find that in, only the introduction of a bill take you 150 days approximately. And then also for the president to sign another 90 days. I am aware that some of the bills actually takes some 2,000 days to reach its finalization. And sometimes it also depends on the constitutionality of a bill and also the quality of the bill. And then the president is sending it to the constitutional court or elsewhere. So my point is, Chair, the urgency of this bill, because we might be happy for a bill that will proceed, but in terms of a duration, we might having a 2 and 3 years waiting for the PSC to act on what is currently happening in our country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable McClure. Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chair. I would love to, greetings to everyone. I would love to join my colleagues in appreciation of the presentation, Chairperson. Chair, if I may ask one question from NSG, how is the NSG engaging with higher education and curriculum transformation of higher education content on public service matters? That was on NSG, Chairperson. And on PSC, what are the resource implications of the amendment of the PSC and what capacity would be required for the for effective implementation of the legislative amendments? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli, Honorable Mbele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentations. Good morning to all on the platform. Chair, mine is just one question, seeking just some clarity or explanation. From slide 6 of the DPSA presentation, I would just like some clarity of the rationale and the factors behind the deciding on a 12-month cooling period, that particular time period from employees then later being eligible to bid for public sector tenders, as opposed to 18 months, 24 or 36 months. And the reason I ask is just in playing devil's advocates, one could argue, if they were going to take the most cynical perspective, that because many departments or government tenders have a 12-month duration in any event, and they have to be renewed on an annual basis, that doesn't really serve as enough of a firewall between somebody potentially exiting from the public service and then becoming eligible, you know, to bid for tenders. So it's just some clarity on the rationale and why not a longer cooling off period, if the intention is to minimize that risk factor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbele, Honorable Maneli. Thank you, Chair, and greetings to Honorable Members and everybody in the platform. Chair, let me also appreciate the presentations. In appreciating these presentations, Chair, I'll then have, I think, about two or three questions about the presentation. Chairperson, my first question would be that the skills audit process, which was triggered by the pronouncement of the President in the SODA debate, had an infrastructure focus, which the President committed that it should be completed in 9 months. So what will be the focus in Home Affairs and in Employment and Labour? And then what is the scope of the skills audit project and what are the timelines? Also, Chair, will the amendments include clauses that enable reversal of inappropriate or unsuitable appointments that do not meet requirements in a timely manner? Those will be my two questions for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maneli. Honorable Schreiber, I've asked honorable members to raise hands and your hands were not up. Now I can see your hand.
Thanks, Chair. Apologies about that. Good morning to all the colleagues. I have two points to add to the discussion. The first one is as far as the Public Service Commission Amendment Bill goes, that I would like to flag here when looking into that aspect of making the secretariat function an independent one. There is another element of that independence which goes beyond the management and human resource element, and that is the financial aspect. So I would like to ask that the department and the PSC also looks at the Public Finance Management Act. Specifically, there are schedules towards the back of that document which lists independent constitutional institutions. And on that schedule, you will find the Public Protector, ICASA, various other bodies, but you will not find the Public Service Commission there. And I think that this is a very serious part of the problem regarding the independence of the operation of the institution is the financial aspect. And I would like to ask that the bill also considers adding the Public Service Commission to that list of independent constitutional institutions and making sure that it has full autonomy over the financial aspect of its independence. The second point is related to the prohibition being placed on office holders in political parties to serve in senior positions, essentially in the public service. I would like to make the committee and the department aware of the process that played out in the COGTA committee, where initial amendments were made or proposed to the Municipal Systems Act, I believe, that would have done the same thing. It would have prohibited senior municipal officials from holding office in political parties. That was subsequently changed, and I believe also on the advice of legal experts, to actually cover all employees in the municipal sphere, because there is a question around limiting the focus, in essence, a question around discrimination, of limiting the focus only to the senior positions. So when it comes to limiting the rights of persons to hold political office in political parties, it is something that must be done consistently. And I would therefore request also, as a second query, that the department looks into extending this and actually goes and look at the Municipal Systems Amendment Act, which was signed into law, I believe, last year, and which already grappled with this issue, so that this committee doesn't have to go through the same process and receive the same legal advice and essentially waste time. We already know from the municipal experience what is the best course of action. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Schreiber. I think Honourable Members have asked all the questions, but I will then, as a Chair, request the NSG, because I have listened and read the last in their presentation, the conclusion. They have said to the portfolio committee, they've finalized and the skills audit project plan, and its implementation is in progress. I will then request that they submit to the before the portfolio committee that skills audit project plan. We'll want to hear and understand its content as the portfolio committee. And I think in the next meeting of the portfolio committee, if the NSG can then submit the skills audit project plan to the portfolio committee. Otherwise, then I will give yourselves the NSG to respond to many questions that have been asked by honourable members, and followed by the NSG, because your presentation was inclusive of yourselves, the NSG and the PSC, and then I will give the PSC.
Thank you, President, and the honourable members for the engagement. So, starting with the last one, Chair, we will be available to update to the committee the project plan for the skills audit. So, and we'll engage with the secretariat of the committee in this regard to make sure that it is available to the committee, so that will definitely be done through the secretariat. And then on the scope, as I indicated, we, Honourable Maneri, just as we emphasize in the professionalization framework and several other instruments that have been discussed here today, we are taking a developmental approach to the interventions that we are doing within the MPSA portfolio. They are not punitive. In the scope of the skills audit, for example, we look at the mandates of the department. So by doing a detailed mandate analysis, you are able to look at the mandates of the department and look at the human resources within the department and analyze the gaps therein. In some instances, let me maybe make an example of ourselves as the National School of Government. In one of the slides that we showed here, we indicate that where we are as the NSG, or where we are moving and where we are emphasizing, is more programs on economic governance. But at the National School of Government, we do not have a senior economist within the organization. So we have an intention and we are moving in that direction, but in our employ, we do not have senior economists. So we make up for this deficit by partnering with higher education institutions from which we are able to draw these expertise. Unfortunately, we are not getting them as consultants, but it's through the partnership arrangement. So this means that in some departments, when you are doing this mandate analysis, it can be able to tell whether if a department has a mandate of building bridges, does it have in its employ a civil engineers, town planners, quantity surveyors, and so on. If there is a gap between the mandate and the human resources in the department as it stands, and we are prioritizing SMS, in fact, not others, we're starting actually at a management level. If there is a gap, then we are able to make a recommendation that says, our audit tells us that here is a gap. With the budget you have for filling vacancies and, you know, in some instances, there are vacancies, of course. With the budget that you have for training, this is where you need to reorient your resources. So it might as well be that in future, Department X might be spending more money, this training budget, training people on project management than spending money training people on public administration, and that's a developmental approach that we are taking, and as indicated, we are hoping that the first phase by the end of this calendar year should be at an advanced stage, and the president is taking a keen interest on this, and so we will have to report, of course, here to the committee, as well as to the president. Honorable Ntuli, how is the NSG engaging higher education institutions? So we are engaging them at various levels. For example, as I indicated, where as the NSG we lack the capacity to deliver certain programs because we don't have internal expertise, or because we need to deliver at scale. With that, we have partnered, for example, with 5 universities through an open process who are delivering
recording.
Anyone
in
the public sector can now study how to do an introduction to social planning and modeling without us having to employ those people to work for the NSG in partnership with a university that's got these such capabilities. We'll be doing so, just as we now have a program on cybersecurity with Deben University of Technology. So we are in very practical in a manner of engaging them. It also through in organizations such as SAPAM, South African Association of Public Administration and Management. This is a big organization in an academic space where schools of public admin as well as practitioners, which is academics, are part of the conference held last year, which had over 400 people, academics, deans and others, were discussing the issue of professionalization and how to integrate its principles into the curriculum in higher education. In addition, engaging with the quality councils that indicated, we're engaging with DHET, the minister, for example, last year already convened a session with various universities and quality councils to look at issues of RPL. As indicated, ourselves in DPSA have a project together with DHET to look at how we can streamline the implementation of RPL into the system. And broadly speaking, of course, engaging with schools of government and in universities in general about how to reform curriculum in order to produce a new cadre of a public servant who is diligent, who is not corrupt, who is ethical and efficient. In terms of the pre-entry assessment, we've done NUKELA for 3 years now. We're happy that the compliance on NUKELA is close to 100%. We have not received a case of a senior manager who has been appointed without a NUKELA as a pre-entry assessment. After 3 years, the program is due for review. We want to understand what its weaknesses are. We want to look at how it is being implemented, after which then we are going to do further enhancements onto the Nugela program. So those are some of the things that are currently underway, Honorable Chair. And then on the issue of the weaknesses in PMDS, I'll defer to my colleague, DG DPSA, to answer this and others. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Principal Pierce. Chair?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Again, we would like to thank the committee for having consistently assisted us and advocated for the passing of the PSC bill. We were assured that with the cabinet approval of the bill, it will go to the full cabinet next week, and it will be out for public comment for a period of 30 days, after which we are hopeful that working together with the committee, having engaged with the speaker for the need for this to be a priority bill before the sixth administration period is over, the sense of urgency in getting this bill through becomes quite evident in a sense. So we are working on that timeline, and we will be keeping our eyes very close on, the issue itself. We have also raised the issue of saying we're repositioning as the PSC, reviewing, preparing for such changes, and we'll be engaging with the Treasury to make sure that necessary adjustments are also made where we needed additional resources to deal with the added responsibility over local government. And we're working very closely with the National School of Government, especially on the issue of implementation. One thing I forgot to mention is that as part of the Forum of Institutions Supporting Democracy, FISD, which include your Chapter 9 institutions and Chapter 13 institutions, we have been propagating the issue of professionalization and the fact that it is imminent, which means those entities must also anticipate and complement whatever effort we are engaging on in making sure that this work is done to develop this capable, ethical public service, which is meritocratic. So I would go as far as that is concerned. But again, our success in the ecosystem of this process depends on your support, which you have demonstrated, because the process of the PSC bill, believe it or not, started way before 2018. And it has suffered many frustrations along the way. So that is the reason why we are so anxious to make sure that what the constitutional framers intended to see is realized finally. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's Dinky, DGPSC. I thought perhaps I could just add on the two other questions that members have raised.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. So on the question of discipline management, just to confirm that we are continuing our oversight role through our program leadership management practices to address issues pertaining to the delays in finalizing disciplinary cases. In fact, in the previous financial year, we had a roundtable discussions where we had findings and recommendations that pointed to a system that really needs a strengthening. We have been engaging with the DPSA. We'll also be sharing with the relevant stakeholders that report with our recommendations. One of the areas we found, for example, that really needs to be improved upon is the prolonged suspension period on disciplinary matters. So just to confirm to members that certainly the PSC is addressing issues pertaining to discipline management. And the question regarding the scheduling of the PSC in terms of the PFMA Schedule 1, I can confirm that it is indeed one of the objectives in the PSC bill. We are looking at ensuring ultimately that we are listed as a Schedule 1 entity in terms of the PFMA. And also members to take note that through our financial analysis of the financial disclosure process, we are then able to identify if there are any officials that are doing business with the state. We also work very closely with the Auditor General so that we are able to share and access database in respect of those. I think those are the questions for the PSC members. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dinky. The DPSA, Honorable DG and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a team with me, so I'm going to ask them to take some of the questions in respect to our responses today. There was a question from Honorable Kibi around the provision that will enable management of remuneration. I would ask a movement of public servants. I'd ask Renisha to take care of that question. Then there's a question around consequential aspects on public service doing business with the state. Renisha or Dr. Solomon, I'm not sure if Dr. Solomon has joined us in the meeting, but Renisha, it's part of the legislative work. Problem areas, review of regulations, what do we seek to address in the review? I think I'll answer this question at a high level, and just to say that what triggered the review of the regulations is two areas, and we're reviewing regulations as well as the directives that we have issued. It's the professionalization work that we have been doing. Now that the framework has been approved and it's out, we need to update our directives. The second part relates to the project of the president of reducing red tape in the public sector. And so we are dealing with our own red tape as the DPSA through the review of our regulations as well as the directives. And you'd know, for instance, that there's in our directives, we require departments to submit a number of reports to DPSA. So we are revisiting that. We are consolidating some of the key reporting areas, and we are going to basically do away with some reporting that is not helping and not making any impact in terms of the work of the departments and the work of DPSA. So just broadly, and to just update, there's lots of innovations as well that are taking place. And if you think around remote working, that's an innovation. So we need to introduce flexibility in terms of the working place and the working area and all those kind of specific things that are in our regulations. There was a question around the progress on discipline management strategy. Just to confirm that a draft discipline management strategy has been submitted by the team. There's some work that is being done on that. However, there are specific projects that we are moving with in the current financial year in discipline management. We presented in detail during our APP presentation, but I just want to highlight that on precautionary suspensions, we are zooming in into SMS precautionary suspensions, and we are introducing policy changes as well as some agency in terms of implementation in some of the areas. We are zooming in on SMS specifically in the current financial year because SMS is not part of the bargaining council processes. So the changes, it's going to be quicker to introduce the changes and implement within the financial year because we don't have to follow the longer consultation processes with the bargaining council, which we will be starting anyway in the current financial year as we are reviewing the discipline code of the public service. So there is work that is taking place. One of the things we're looking at is the long drawn suspensions. And we are looking at putting together an independent panel now between May and June that's going to review all these long drawn suspensions and give recommendations to the accounting officers on how to deal with these particular cases, so that those employees who can still go back to work must go back to work. Those who are not maybe facing serious charges or their return to work is not going to interfere with operations in departments. And we try and manage and push the departments to complete the investigations and those particular cases. Weaknesses in the PMDS system. There is policy matters we're addressing in the PMDS system. And I just want to make an example about the PMDS for DG's head of department, because we are taking that to cabinet. There's policy matters that we have to update. There's issues that we must clarify around roles and responsibilities that we're updating, and the evaluation, just the technical process issues. But there is generally a concern, if you go to non-SMS, there's a bigger concern. Or if I go to the entire system of performance management, there's a bigger concern that the problem also is the managers and supervisors, because they do not implement and play according to the roles, to the rules of the system. If a supervisor is in collusion of the people that he or she is supervising, or scared of the people that he or she is supervising, they tend to give them higher higher weights or higher marks in terms of the PMDS processes themselves. So the oversight at a departmental level and the support by HR to supervisors in terms of this work is very important. And we are doing an entire research around this PMDS for lower levels and the improvements that we need to do in respect to that. But the one for DGs or HODs, we've already completed the research and we are now processing our work through the cabinet processes in relation to that. There was a question, are SMS requirements low? It was an NSG question, but I just want to say from our side, we're also doing research on this matter of SMS requirements, and we're collecting data from departments. And one of the things that is coming out very clearly is that we have to have a two-track system of recruitment or even of requirements for SMS members who are specialists versus those who are in administrative functions. We have to have a different mechanism that we put in place around the requirements. For instance, the argument is that an SMS member, a director who is going to be running, let's say, an ICT specialist on blockchain, who has to come into government to prepare our systems to be able to adopt blockchain, does not need to have 5 years experience in being a manager in the public sector. We can literally take somebody from the private sector who meets the qualification requirements to come and do the work in the public service on a permanent role or in and out to do the work over a shorter contract over a period of time and then exit the system. So we are looking at those particular advances that are being made by the implementing departments. There was an issue around reversal of inappropriate or unsuitable appointments. I think this is still part of the legislative issues, Renisha, you'll have to take care of. And then Honorable Motsepe asked about the HOPA role and whether it won't be compromised because the DG is in the presidency. We've done a number of work on this and research on this area. The roles that the legislation is delegating directly to the DG in the presidency are those roles that should be played by the presidents in relation to the heads of departments. So it shouldn't really create any compromising, because that's the work that the president should be doing. If you think about discipline management and other issues of DGs, those issues are at the door of the president. It shouldn't be overburdening the DG, because there is a capability that is at DPME, at a chief directorate level, that has been availed to support that work of the DG in the presidency as it relates to HOPA. The same in the provinces. the HOPA roles go to the DGs who are in the Premier's office, and they should be supported through the structures that are already in the Premier's office and doing the work of coordination with HODs and departments. So what we have done through this is we have ensured that there's no additional cost to the fiscals in relation to the HOPA role, because in any case, it's the role that the DGs in provinces and DG National have already been playing, but it must just be delegated appropriately to them. Safeguarding employees from abuse when they're being transferred, avoiding that they are being transferred due to clashing personalities. Renisha is going to take that question because we are quite clear on the legislation around business with the state as well. Renisha, any transgressions from three spheres? Renisha is going to take that question. The last question, or there was a question again around the curriculum transformation in higher education institutions. I need to highlight here that DPSA has entered into an agreement with the APAM, the Association for SAPAM, the South African Association for Public Administration and Management, who are quite big players in the area of higher education institutions, especially public management teaching. And they've managed to host one workshop which ourselves and NSG presented and engaged with the heads of public management in higher education institutions. And this work continues in terms of influencing the agenda or the curriculum of these institutions, so that by the time the students are getting out of the education system, they are at least ready and understand the professionalization agendas, your issues like ethics and values and et cetera. And the rationale and factors behind a 12-month cooling period. Renisha, please attend to this particular question. I think those were the questions from our part. The last one on the skills audit project, I think the principal highlighted that there is investment that was done by PCTA working with DPSA in developing a skills audit methodology for the public service. This has ultimately been approved, and we've issued information to all departments. We are in engagement with PCTA around the training of our colleagues in government departments, so that they can look at how they administer the system internally, as well as NSG has indicated that they have also developed their own capability around supporting the departments to ensure that the skills audit project is done. The president has given us this financial year as part of ministerial priorities to ensure that all government departments, national and provincially, have gone through a skills audit process, and then there is reports that are coming out. As a principal was saying, it's not a punitive process, but a developmental process. So those departments, especially the smaller departments that can be assisted and trained to administer the tool for themselves, there will be that training that will be taking place. And those others who, because of the size, there's also complexities, they will certainly will have to contract with entities like NSG to support them to be able, or departments like NSG to support them to be able to deliver on this. We will issue a specific directive as well in respect to this after we train everybody. We have asked PCTA to ensure that we prioritize would have been done for all our departments, and we will come back with the updated information in respect to this to the committee. And those are all the questions that have been given to us. Chairperson, with your permission, if Renisha can take those specific technical questions that were asked as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps if I can just quickly go through some of these questions. The question around how will we regulate the remuneration of persons who are transferred. So what the PAMA does is the amendment suggests that No employee upon transfer will suffer any reduction in salary. So what that will mean is that there will have to be a retention of current salaries and pension, etc. The framework under which that will be done through regulations. There is also provision in the PAMA that is proposed, which was not part of the presentation, but there is work that is also being envisaged to be done to create a remuneration framework that will cut across all three spheres of government, so that going forward, we should be able to have, if we're talking a single public service, we should have synergy in how jobs are graded and how personnel are paid, and that work is still to be done and is still envisaged to come out of the personnel expenditure review process. So in terms of the law itself, there is a protection of salary and benefits on transfer. And just while I'm dealing with the transfer issue, there was also a question on how we safeguard the rights of employees when we transfer people across the spheres of government. The Act itself, or the bill, is proposing that any transfer of an employee from the public service to local government or within municipalities themselves, because we recognize that municipalities also have different remuneration frameworks and different benefits. So those transfers that take place across spheres of government will then require the consent of employees. So in that way, we are ensuring that no employee will be transferred against their will or be prejudiced in any way. On the issue of doing business with the state, I'm just going to touch on perhaps what we are proposing in the amendments, and Dr. Solomon can add once I'm done. In terms of the provisions of the existing Public Administration Management Act, there is a prohibition on all employees doing business with the state and being directors in companies. What we are doing through this amendment is we are dealing with some of the unintended consequences. Example, there are employees who are appointed on boards as part of their duties in the public service. They represent the state on some of these boards. But when those companies then do business with other organs of state, it creates a difficulty where the unintended consequence is that those particular employees appointed ex officio are then construed within the definition and then become liable for the penalties of what PAMA envisages as the prohibition. So what we are doing in the amendments is we are saying any person who is appointed ex officio then does not fall within the scope of that provision of PAMA and cannot be then subjected to criminal proceedings, etc. The second amendment we're doing in that is that we are also, and I think we will deal with these in more detail as we get through the portfolio committee on the bills themselves. But the second amendment is then to deal with also what do we mean by organ of state? And we clarify that role. What do we mean when we say you must not be a director of a company? We clarify what a company means. We align it to the public, to the company's law or the company's act. And we also give then the power to the minister to determine what activities do not fall within the scope of doing business with the state. As an example, a teacher who marks exam papers and gets paid for that does not construe within the definition. So we allow the Minister for Public Service and Administration to then determine which activities then do not fall within the confines of this law, because to do that will then mean, or to allow those activities to fall within the scope might then compromise the ability of the state to do its work. So those provisions have been factored in, and that's part of the amendments we are doing. In terms of the reversal of appointments, currently there is already a provision in the Public Service Act, and that's in Section 5.7 of the Public Service Act, which allows a functionary, being a minister or DG or whoever takes these decisions, to correct a decision if it was incorrect in law or if it was fraudulent or it was based on an, if it was fraudulent, it was unlawful, or if it was an error. And it must be in the public interest. So that provision exists, but the way appointments are set aside are also must also take into account the persons that are affected by the setting aside. So not in all circumstances, it's not as easy as saying this appointment was wrong and therefore we're setting it aside, because it has consequences of somebody being unemployed, and that person could potentially then bring dispute mechanisms, et cetera. So as you do those corrections and as you set aside appointments, there are certain processes that must be considered. And we always guide departments to make sure that when you make these corrections where something has happened unlawfully, you must also then mitigate against any potential claims against the department, especially where the person you've employed was not at fault. Possible not set aside easily those appointments. So the current amendments don't then deal with any further provisions in this regard. In terms of the 12-month cooling period, I think perhaps I didn't explain it properly. What the legislation is doing is that we are saying all employees in the system who have participated in awarding contracts to service providers may not leave the public service for a period of 12 months and join the service provider who was successful in that bid. So what they can't do is be part of a process that awards a tender to company X, and then 2 months down the line, resign from the public service and join company X as a partner or a shareholder, or in any manner be employed by that company X. Because what they would then do, it would allow for the company X to benefit from a contract, and this employee then goes and benefits from that contract on the other side. And we are suggesting that that prohibition or that restraint of doing that is then limited to 12 months, which we believe is a reasonable time, because constitutionally we also had to balance the ability to restrain trade versus to ensure that no misconduct happens where tenders are awarded to benefit employees. So currently the provision is for 12 months, and what we are saying is any employee who transgresses that, or any service provider who transgresses that and employs this particular employee within this 12-month period, is liable to criminal action. So we've also put in penalties of criminality in terms of the provision. So it's about preventing employees from awarding contracts to service providers and then benefiting within that 12-month period. The last question in terms of political parties and being members of political parties at the top spheres of government. What we have done is that we have taken lessons from what has happened in the Municipal Systems Act. And we've also had regard to the opinions, et cetera, that have been produced in that regard. As we went through the process, so we started with looking at the possibility of having all employees prohibited from holding political office. And again, political office means the top hierarchy of political parties. And we started with the provision that all employees should not hold those six positions or seven positions or however many positions are in that top sphere. But as we went through the constitutional checks, we had to balance between what would be the role of employees generally and what would be the role of holding political office. And what we found is that constitutionally, we could only justify the limit or the limitation on political rights to the extent that those employees who exercise responsibilities under law would then be compromised in the exercise of their duties if they were holding political office. And we have therefore only been able to justify that it's HODs and those reporting to HODs who then have those functions that are allocated to them, which potentially could conflict with them holding political office. We could not justify extending that prohibition to all employees because not all employees in the public service have financial responsibilities or HR responsibilities. So it was a constitutionality issue, and we've raised it, and we've gotten legal opinions on it. And as far as we could go, we've limited it, therefore, to just HODs and those reporting to HODs for that reason. DG, I think I've answered most of the questions. I want to just give Dr. Solomon an opportunity to maybe add to what I've said about doing business with the state. Thanks.
Thanks, Renisha. Good morning, ministers, deputy ministers, chairperson of the Public Service Commission and chair. I don't think there's a lot to add, maybe just to reiterate what Renisha said, that under the public service regulations, there was actually a list with 10 activities that were not considered to be doing business with the state. And one of the unintended consequences was with the amendments that this list will now disappear and that there will not be a provision to allow for certain category or certain activities to be seen as not conducting business with the state. And by the amendments that was brought in, it's now there's a mechanism to allow the minister to determine the certain activities that will be allowed. And these are the activities that is now currently under the PSA, but it's like the marking and training, teaching at educational institutions where some of the public servants are also lecturing and sharing their knowledge and allowing a knowledge build to increase. And then there's some of the, like the appointment of audit committees, the appointment of the police reservists, and those reservists for the defense force that would have been seen then as conducting business with the state, but with a mechanism that's now introduced, that will be taken care of. So just to add that from a practical point of view. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues, and for your responses. And now in the last item, honorable members, now that the TPSA, the NSG and the PSC has presented and we have asked questions and they were all clarified, and now we are then referring this framework as this portfolio committee to process. And I will then request that get hands that adopt this framework too, so that it reaches the parliament, honorable members. Honorable members.
Sorry, Chairperson, it's Honourable Mbeeling. I am here, but I didn't catch the last parts of what you were saying.
No, I'm saying then now that the presentation of the framework has been presented to all of us as Honourable Members, and we have asked questions and there were responses and food and detailed responses, we are now referring this framework to process. That was the last part, Honorable Bell. Honorable Manet.
Honorable Chair? Chair, I think these were just presentations for members to just be in a position to understand with how far is PSC, TPSA, and NSG in terms of the framework, but they were not necessarily for adoption, for being considered with the House Chair. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much, Masi. Honorable Maneli, I think we have heard Masi.
Yes, Chair, I'm covered.
No, thank you very much, honorable members. The department is led by the DG, the NSG, is led by the principal, the PSC, is led by the chair, and all colleagues, the staff of this portfolio committee. And at least now this framework has been noted by the portfolio committee. And I think now is the end of this meeting. So that we prepare ourselves to catch the bus and be ready for the debate at 3 o'clock. So as we end this meeting, colleagues and honorable members, thank you very much for your time. Then the meeting is adjourned.
Chair? Chairperson?
Merci.
Yes, Chair, I had requested via the WhatsApp, Chair, to actually just advise members of the bill that we just recently received, Chair. I thought I should just remind you that if you can just allow us as the Secretariat, Chair, to just brief members on that particular bill, Chair.
No, that's fine. Let's hope that the honorable members are still here. Okay, I can see Honorable Mbele, Malumane, Honorable Maneli, Honorable Kibi is still here, and Duli, and Honorable Gondwe, and Honorable Notnachal, Honorable Mutlipi, you can proceed.
Yes, thank you so much. I think also, let me also send greetings to honorable members and to you, Chairperson, to say that indeed we did receive a referral, Chairperson, from the House in terms of IPAMA, the PAMA bill. If I just go quickly through that document, Chair, just bear with me. It was referred to the committee, Chairperson, a week back, where the committee must then process the very same bill, Chairperson. It's a public administration management bill, Chair. We also were anticipating to also have another bill, Chair, that is going to also be submitted to us, Chair. If you can just allow me, Chair, to quickly go through this draft program that we've just crafted, Chair, that today is the 17th, where we identified to say that we are going to refer the bill to the committee to say just as a form of information, Chair. And we are also, Chairperson, through DPSA, we are anticipating to also have DPSA to come to us, Chairperson, on the 7th. Just to brief the committee, Chair, on both bills, Chairperson. And then subsequently, we are anticipating to advertise, Chair, for both bills for submissions to the committee, Chair, and the 1st of June, Chair. We also, Chair, if you can just check there, Chair. Sometime in July, Chair, first week and I think second week of July, which is the 5th and the 12th, Chair, we are anticipating to have public hearings where we will then request those that submitted the submissions to come before the committee, Chair, and then subsequently listen to them, Chair. And then we are anticipating to finalize this bill, Chair, sometime in September, Chair, which we've identified the 6th, Chair, for now. Chair, so basically, Chair, this documents were sent to the committee last week, Thursday, Chair, which has got an ATC, the B bill, Chair, and also this program, Chair. You say, there's that possibility that the committee will have to attend this particular bill as it was referred to us. I'm not sure if Julius and also Mr. Ngwope can also just also assist, Chair, if I've missed anything. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Biela and Mr. Ngwope.
Good morning, Chair. From my side, there's nothing that Mr. Zivego has missed. I think that is the proposal from the support staff.
Thank you, Chair. We are together with my colleagues. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. That's it, Chair. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much, Masu. And I think that honorable members have listened to your presentation of the bills. So I think that was the last item.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much, colleagues and honorable members. Now the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much, honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Malbongwe. Okay.